Every day we face decisions that we have to make. Some of those decisions are simple and easy. Others are complicated and difficult. What decisions are you facing today? What decisions are you facing in the coming days, perhaps even this next week? Perhaps you're facing something as serious as changing locations and moving to some other place. Maybe it's contemplating leaving your job and taking another one. Maybe it's something as serious as leaving your spouse. Now, I mention those for the simple reason that in the last week, I have talked to people who were dealing with those very awesome decisions. What's the decision you're facing? Let me ask another question. When you face those decisions, how do you make them? How do you decide what to do? It's my experience that decisions can get complicated very quickly. That often there are two attractive options. What do you do when that happens? Sort of like the situation you get into when you want to go out to eat and you have a taste for one type of food, and as you think about it, then you get an appetite for another type, and you have two very good options, and you're torn between the two. Sometimes decision-making is like that. What do you do then? What principles do you use to make those kinds of decisions? Let me ask another question. Did you ever make a wrong decision? I have. What makes us do that? What makes us choose the wrong thing? We can see it very clearly from hindsight. Wouldn't it be helpful if we knew up front what makes us do that so we wouldn't do it anymore? I want to talk to you about decision making. I don't want to oversimplify the process because I recognize that decision making can be complicated. And it often includes many factors and facets. At the same time, I want to mention one principle that unfortunately is sometimes excluded from decision making and needs to be included in decision making. It could mean the difference, and often does, between making the right decision and the wrong decision. Will you turn with me to Proverbs chapter 9. Proverbs chapter 9. Solomon says, "Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillows. She has slaughtered her meat. She has mixed her wine. She has also furnished her table. She has sent out her maidens. She cries out from the high places of the city. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. As for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, 'Come, eat of my bread and drink of the wine which I have mixed. Forsake foolishness and live, and go in the way of understanding.' He who reproves a scoffer gets shame for himself, and he who rebukes a wicked man gets himself a blemish. Do not reprove a scoffer, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days shall be multiplied, and the years of life will be added to you. And if you are wise, you are wiser for yourself. And if you scoff, you alone will bear it. A foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knows nothing. For she sits at the door of her house, on a seat by the high places of the city, to call to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And as for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, 'Stolen water is sweet, And bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of hell. So Solomon wrote in a passage we call Proverbs chapter 9. I have suggested, as we've been going through these early chapters of Proverbs, that the book of Proverbs is often thought of as containing single sentences and sometimes twin sentences that are pithy, short, summary statements. That's true, especially beginning in chapter 10, but the first nine chapters contain discourses. Discourses that Solomon gives to his son and to his children on the subject of wisdom. This is the last discourse in that introductory part of the first nine chapters of Proverbs. In those nine chapters, Solomon, on more than one occasion, personifies wisdom. Matter of fact, he did that in chapter 8. He does so again in chapter 9, only this time he does something in addition. He not only personifies wisdom on the one hand, but on the other hand, he also personifies folly. He pictures them as two women. In the first 12 verses of this chapter, he tells us about, well, let's call her Lady Wisdom. In verses 13 through 18, he talks about another, well, you can't call her lady. She's not a lady. Let's call her Female Folly. And in a more interesting twist, he not only personifies wisdom and folly, he depicts them both as inviting people to a meal. So in the first 12 verses, it is Lady Wisdom inviting people to her table. And in verses 13 through 18, it is Female Folly inviting people to come and dine with her. Now, I would like to suggest that there is a very instructive principle here that we need to capture. I call this chapter Two Invitations to Dinner. But in these two invitations, there's one overwhelming truth that we need to assimilate. So with that in mind, let's begin with Lady Wisdom and look at her invitation to a banquet. The opening verses describe her preparation for our meal. It says, verse 1, she has built her house, she has hewn out seven pillows. She has slaughtered her meat, she has mixed her wine, she has also furnished the table. It seems to me that in these verses there's three aspects to the preparation: the house, the table, and the meal itself. The house is said to be constructed with seven pillows. That tells us immediately that this is a large house. It also suggests that it is a stable house. Later we learn that she's in the high places of the city. So what you need to imagine is this rather large, elegant, grand mansion seated and situated on the top of a hill. It is stable and sturdy. It is also very attractive. Then it tells us that she prepared her table. Doesn't tell us what that amounted to, but in today's terms, that means there was perhaps a linen tablecloth, some kind of a centerpiece, perhaps flowers. Then there was the finest china and the silverware handed down from the grandparents. She has built the house and prepared the table. She's also prepared the meal. It tells us in verse 2, she slaughtered her meat and she has mixed her wine. In biblical terms, to slaughter the meat implies and indicates that this was a feast. Fresh meat was to be served. That was left for special occasions such as this. The little phrase, she mixed her wine, is capable of two different interpretations. It can mean she mixed it with water, which was often done to make it more palatable. It can also mean that she mixed it with spices. Sometimes, especially at a banquet or a feast, they mixed it with spices to make it even more intriguing. At any rate, these opening verses tell us that she has prepared a meal, a banquet, if you will. She has prepared the meal and invited us to come and dine. Now, what is it we're supposed to eat? Well, verse 6 says that she tells the people she invites, "Forsake foolishness and live, and go in the way of understanding." Clearly, we're told that Lady Wisdom is preparing a meal that is appealing and appetizing and nutritious, one that will make us strong and healthy. Matter of fact, we could say that these surroundings are describing something that would make us healthy and happy. At the same time, this eating and drinking symbolizes the assimilation of wisdom. And that's the point of verse 6, forsake foolishness and live. We're being invited to come and partake of God's wisdom, a table he has prepared of appealing, appetizing, healthy food called wisdom. And he invites us to come and sit at Lady Wisdom's table and feast on her food. Now the question is, what kind of wisdom are we talking about? In verse 10 he says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." Lady Wisdom is inviting us to live a wise life, to make wise choices, to use wisdom in our decision-making process. Frankly, that's the thing that is often left out. And that's the principle we ought to incorporate when we make decisions. That kind of wisdom begins with a fear of the Lord. Now, we've looked at that phrase as we've gone through Proverbs before, and I've pointed out that it doesn't mean just to be terrified, though it includes that. The primary meaning of this phrase is to have this awe of the Lord, this reverence for him, and this trust for him and in him, as well as be terrified of him when you step out of line. But this verse is one of the most important in all of the book of Proverbs to explain this phrase. Notice it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." There's a little technique that these writers of Scripture used called parallelism. When we write poetry, we try to choose words that rhyme. In the ancient nation of the Jews, they used parallelism, and there are different types of parallelisms, but often the first line is explained by the second. The first two lines mean the same thing. And such is the case here. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and then the fear of the Lord is described in the latter part of verse 10, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So that to fear the Lord is to know him. It's to so trust him and assimilate his word and his wisdom that we really get to know him. And then we understand life from his perspective. So, Lady Wisdom invites us to come and dine at her table of wisdom, which we begins with trusting the Lord and getting to know him. Now, there are other things involved, to be sure. I think it becomes evident as you read the rest of these verses that truth and justice and righteousness are also involved. That's part of making wise decisions. It's making decisions that include the Lord. It's making decisions that involve doing what's right and truthful and doing what is just. So Lady Wisdom invites us to her table of wisdom. Then she sends out the maids, and they cry in the high places of the city. And what happens next in this passage is that she mentions several different types of people that are invited to the feast. So in the first two verses, there is the preparation. In verse 3, she sends out her maids and sends out a proclamation, which is an invitation to wisdom. And now in verses 4 and following, all the way down through verse 12, actually, she mentions three different types of people that are invited to this feast. For example, in verse 4, she says, "Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. As for him who lacks understanding," she says to him, "come, eat my bread and drink the wine which I have mixed. Forsake foolishness and live, and go in the way of understanding." Again, the simpleton is someone we have encountered before in the book of Proverbs. The Hebrew word simply means to be open. The person who is simple, from the point of view of the book of Proverbs, is someone who is open to all external stimuli. It's a person who is inexperienced. I have often likened this person to a junior high teenager who just has no clue from lack of experience, and so could go in either direction. Lady Wisdom is particularly interested in that type of person attending her banquet. She says to her maids, "Invite the simple. They, of all people, need to know wisdom that begins with a fear of the Lord." A very strange thing happens at this point in the passage. She says, "He who reproves the scoffer gets shame for himself, and he who rebukes a wicked man gets himself a blemish. Do not reprove a scoffer, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you." Without specifically saying that these people are being invited, she introduces the scoffer and the wise man. So just notice in your Bibles, verse 4 talks about the simple, verse 7 introduces the scoffer, and in the middle of verse 8, the wise man is introduced. Let's talk about the scoffer for a minute. That word means the mocker, someone who mocks God and who mocks morality. This passage is saying, if you reprove a scoffer, you get shame to yourself. If you rebuke a wicked man, which is the same as a scoffer in verse 7, you get a blemish. So verse 8 says, don't reprove him lest he hate you. Now notice the consequences of rebuking or reproving or correcting a mocker. You will be hated, you will be disgraced, and you will have a blemish. Wow. And why would you ever do that? Well, because the scripture tells us to in some circumstances. The New Testament is careful to say not everybody should do this, but there are times when it is necessary to correct somebody or to rebuke them or to reprove them because God said go do it. But that doesn't mean that the person you correct is going to respond properly. As a matter of fact, the person may not, as we are being told here. And it doesn't mention what the specifics are, but having been involved in this and having to have done it a few times, I can tell you one of the things that happens, and that is this. If you go correct somebody and they don't want to hear you, what they will do is blame you for correcting them. The way they will do it is say, "You didn't say it right." Or you made a slip or somehow as you were talking to me. I call this the Stephen principle. Remember Stephen in the book of Acts? He rebuked the nation of Israel for crucifying Christ, and they picked up stones and stoned him. See, if you don't like the message, you stone the messenger. And that's what scoffers do. When they don't like what you have to say, they attack you for giving them the message. So he says, don't do that. They will hate you, or at least be prepared for them hating you and blaming you. In the middle of verse 8, he says, but rebuke a wise man and he will love you. Give him instruction and he will be still wiser. Teach a man and he will increase in learning. The third individual that's invited to this feast is the wise man. And the wise man will love you. If you rebuke him, if you correct him, if you show him someplace where he's going in the wrong direction, he will appreciate that and will love you. And not only that, he'll become even wiser. He will love you and personally learn from you. So, in the middle of this passage, if you'll pardon the pun, sandwiched between the two feasts is this little discussion of the scoffer and the wise man. Now, let me pause here and make a couple of observations. One is that perhaps in this passage we're being told that though everyone is invited to Lady Wisdom's feast, not everybody will respond. The scoffer will mock the meal. The wise man, you don't have to invite, he's already sitting at the table. So the one person that's focused on in this passage is the simpleton. Another observation I would make is simply this. If you read the book of Proverbs carefully, especially these first 9 chapters, you will quickly see that actually this little passage right here summarizes a lot of what's going on in the book of Proverbs. The subject of Proverbs is wisdom. Solomon is talking to his son and urging him to follow wisdom, to make wise decisions, as it were. But these characters, the wise man, the fool, the scoffer, the simpleton, the sluggard, pop up once in a while. It's almost as if, especially with the simpleton, that the writer of Proverbs is saying, here is wisdom. And there are those who reject it, that is the fool and the scoffer. And there are those who embrace it, the men of wisdom and understanding. And in the middle are the simpletons. As a matter of fact, the prologue of the book of Proverbs points out that it was written to give the simple wisdom. They're the ones caught in the middle. They haven't made up their minds yet. They haven't chosen yet. And wisdom particularly goes after that person so that they will gain wisdom and understanding and do the right thing, especially the beginning of wisdom, which is the fear of the Lord. So, to sum it all up, these first 12 verses are saying, Lady Wisdom prepared a meal. She proclaimed that everyone is invited, but the people she particularly focused on were the simple, the scoffer, and the wise. The wise were probably already sitting at the table. The scoffers weren't going to come no matter what you said. And so it's the simple that she particularly focuses on and asks them to come. The results, if you do, by the way, are given in verse 11. For by me your days will be multiplied and the years of life will be added to you. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. And if you scoff, you are alone will bear it. In other words, you are personally responsible for this decision, not the group around you. And if you respond to Lady Wisdom, you will have longer life and a better quality of life at that. So, the first 12 verses is being invited to a feast by Lady Wisdom. For the past several months, I've lost my wife to books. As many of you know, she's been studying for a securities exam. Actually, she's had to take 2 exams. She took one a week or so ago, and she passed it. And then she had to take a second one. The first one was the big one, and it's the one that she spent several months studying for. And this one last week was rather small by comparison, even smaller in length. But she had to study for it nevertheless, and she took it. Now, I confess to you that I had a vested interest in her passing this exam. If she passed, I would get my wife back. If she didn't, she would bury herself in these books for another 30 days, and I would lose my wife again. So last Thursday, I took her to the exam. I prayed as she took it. As she came out, I was relieved. She passed. And oh, by the way, she was relieved. She was as relieved as a criminal who had been condemned to death row and just been told that he'd gotten a pardon. I mean, she was free. We were both elated. And so we decided to celebrate. Now, we hadn't had lunch yet, and so we decided to go out to dinner. We contemplated doing several things, the first of which was to go to this little ribs place that we really like. But we've both been trying to watch it lately, and frankly, that ribs place had the most delicious, sumptuous ribs, but they were so fattening. So we considered another alternative, and she suggested that we eat a lot healthier meal at home. So she went and got a couple of little filet mignon steaks with all the trimmings, and we went home and she prepared it, and we sat out on the patio, and we don't live too far from the ocean, and we had this cool ocean breeze and this luscious dinner in the most pleasant of circumstances with celebrating her passing these exams. Now that is a small picture of what this passage is saying. God personifies Lady Wisdom, preparing a meal of wisdom and inviting us all to come and dine. It is appealing. The house is set and built, the table is furnished, and the meal is prepared. It's attractive, it's appetizing, it's healthy, in pleasant and happy surroundings. Come and dine. And he says, you will live longer and happier if you make up your mind that what you're going to do is live a wise life, which means you're going to include the Lord. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. So you're going to include him in all those decisions that you have to make. Now let me ask you a question. That sounds so simple. Then why don't we always do that? Why do we sometimes make foolish decisions? Why don't we always make those good and godly decisions? Well, to answer that question, we need to look at the latter part of Proverbs chapter 9. In Proverbs chapter 9, beginning with verse 13, we're told about a second banquet, a second dinner, this one hosted by female folly. Verse 13 says, "A foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knows nothing, for she sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest places of the city to call those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And as for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant." Now, there's several things about this passage that we need to note. For one thing, this woman is called clamorous. She is loud and boisterous. She is called simple. Verse 13 says she knows nothing. In other words, there is nothing in her mouth and there is nothing in her mind that is at all appealing or attractive. It says she, verse 14, sits at the door of her house. Now that's interesting. In stark contrast to Lady Wisdom in the first 12 verses, female folly sits. Lady Wisdom was pictured as being busy at work, building a house, preparing a table, fixing the meal. Female Folly sits at the door of her house, causing trouble. It's also interesting that verse 14 says she sits in the high places of the city. That's interesting, because Lady Wisdom was said to be located in the high places of the city. Verse 3 says she cries out from the high places of the city. In other words, Lady Wisdom and Female Folly are both in the same vicinity. They are near each other. As a matter of fact, Female Folly says that she calls to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. It seems to me that the picture is this. Both are situated on a high hill. But Female Folly is located on the way to Lady Wisdom's house. So you have to pass by going to Lady Wisdom's house. And when you do, Female Folly cries out to lure you into foolishness instead of wisdom. So we are told in verse 16, whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And as for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Notice the only person she appeals to is the simpleton. The scoffer is not mentioned, nor is the wise man. Clearly, this passage focuses on the simpleton, the person who's not made up his or her mind as to which way to go. So Folly is trying to appeal to this person to come to her table. And the appeal is, verse 17, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Stolen water is sweet. What an interesting comment. It says, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Now, elsewhere in Proverbs, stolen water is referred to, or is used of, a harlot. And some might want to suggest that this is referring to a prostitute. Now, she may be that, but there's more here than that, because verse 13 says, the foolish woman is clamorous. This is an invitation not to illicit sex, but to folly. And that's the point of the passage. Now, my question is this. What would entice a person to go into folly? Especially since of all that we've said about wisdom, why would somebody be enticed to go after folly? I think the key to this, and the key as to why we sometimes make wrong decisions, is in verse 17, where she says, stolen water is sweet. Notice it says in verse 17, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Folly makes foolishness sweet and pleasant, and that's the reason that we do it. That's the reason we make wrong decisions. We focus on what we think is sweet at the moment and pleasant, and we go after it. The devil makes sin sweet. He's not stupid. And because it appears to us to be pleasant and sweet, we go after it. I was racking my brain trying to figure out how to illustrate sweetness. The one thing that comes to mind, the thing that perhaps is one of the sweetest things I ever had, is baklava, a famous dessert that's often prepared by Greeks and Armenians. But there's another thing that really is sweet, and that is a Krispy Kreme donut. You may never have heard of it living in Southern California, but where I grew up in Florida, there was a Krispy Kreme donut shop, and I grew up eating them. Actually, the beginning goes back to a French recipe that came out of New Orleans and ended up in Pascagoula, I think it was, Kentucky, and then went through Nashville and ended up in Salem, North Carolina. And what is today Winston-Salem, North Carolina. On July 13th, 1937, a man opened the Krispy Kreme donut shop in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. These donuts are unbelievably sweet. They're unbelievably delicious. As a matter of fact, one article written about them said that the customers are so loyal they could be close to cultists when it comes to eating these donuts. Recently, for the first time, one opened in Southern California in La Habra, and people lined up down the street just to get one of these incredibly, unbelievably sweet donuts. Was such a phenomenon, it made the evening news. Now, months or so ago, at the first of the month, I decided to go on a diet. And I did something I'd never done before. I decided to count calories. Every morning I made a little chart in my computer, and every morning I wrote down how many calories I'd eaten the day before. For 25 days, I stuck to that diet. My wife and I have a practice that once a week we spend time just together and go on a date. And on the 25th day of my diet, it was a Friday night, she and I went out to eat, and we really behaved ourselves. We ate low-calorie, low-fat, boring food. We got all done. We were walking out to the car, and I remembered that news broadcast about Krispy Kreme being in Southern California in La Habra. I think it was in the middle of the parking lot that the donut demon wrestled me to the ground and waved one of those Krispy Kreme donuts under my nose. And I got in my car and I drove from Santa Monica to La Habra just to get a Krispy Kreme donut. Now, that's 50 miles. What drew me there was the sweetness of that donut. And by the way, it destroyed my diet. As a matter of fact, verse 18 in this passage says, "But he who does not know the dead are there, and that our guests are in the depths of hell." Wow. You live a life of folly? You leave God and his word and his wisdom out of your life, and something dies. Just as that donut destroyed my diet, folly will destroy your life. As a matter of fact, I'd lost 6 pounds in 25 days. One visit to the donut store, and I measured the next morning. I gained 2 pounds. So that's what this passage is saying. Notice that verse 6 says that if you followed Lady Wisdom, you would forsake foolishness and live. And verse 18 says, but if you follow folly, you end up in death. So, forsake folly and follow wisdom. Make wise decisions. Include the Lord. And don't end up dining at the table of female folly. Eat at the table of Lady Wisdom. Let me close by putting it like this. When you have a decision to make, include the Lord. That's the principle that's so often missing It's the sweetness of folly that makes us make wrong decisions. It's we want creature comforts and we want to do what feels good and is comfortable at the moment. Beware. Don't do that. Make wise decisions. Don't make foolish decisions. If you are within the sight of the house of female folly, and that house has caught your attention and you're looking at it and contemplating it, there's still time for you to look the other way. If you are thinking about entering that house, there's still time to make a U-turn. If you're on the porch of female folly, you can still turn around and go to the house of Lady Wisdom. If you are sitting at the table of female folly, you can always get up and leave. If you're eating her bread and drinking her wine, you can always change your diet. Because don't you see, if you eat at the table of folly, there's food poisoning that leads to death. But if you eat at the table of Lady Wisdom, there is healthy food and you will be happier in the long run.